The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Sold for Sale, Home Buyers Return. With COVID-19 fears still lingering among the population, numbers show home sales are beginning to inch upward after a dismal couple of months. And the cover story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, As sales dip, market goes virtual. Many in the business of selling homes have ramped up their digital efforts in an effort to showcase properties. And this was written by Caleb Harshberger. For realty company Jacqueline Smith Properties, the start of 2020 was shaping up to be the best in the company's seven-year history. We had a really good first quarter. It was record-breaking, Jacqueline Smith says of her Johnston County company. I feel like it'll be in the history books as one of the best ever. COVID-19 changed things for us a bit. Smith started in the real estate business in 2013, around the same time her husband Reed, a longtime home builder in the area, began his company, 127 Homes. Soon she was growing her company, selling homes, and amid some of the best years the Triangle market has seen. We've definitely seen it grow, Smith says. The office has since grown to around 16 team members, according to the company, and serves a growing number of customers. Like many home builders and brokers in the Triangle, the first few months of this year marked a high point after years of a booming market and insatiable demand for homes. But by late March, potential buyers grappled with both health and financial concerns, and by April, the market was showing signs of slowing. Meanwhile, brokers scrambled to put the tools in place to continue marketing homes without in-person meetings, relying on video calls and 3D virtual home tours to show and market homes to buyers sheltering at home. And while the pandemic continues, summer has arrived, and across the Triangle, brokers and analysts say the worst may already be over for the housing industry. A difficult spring. The troubles began in March when the realities of the pandemic hit home. Showings plunged in March, followed by a drop in sales and listings across the region as buyers delayed plans for a new home. Even then, we didn't stop, Smith says, but it was not at the same volume. Brokers across the region scrambled to adapt to the new restrictions with new virtual tools such as video calls and online tours to connect with clients. That led to some delays, but kept the gears turning for still interested buyers and sellers in the market. In Raleigh, Coldwell banker Howard Perry and Walston CEO David Jones says the company adapted to the new world of virtual home marketing, shifting to remote meetings, video calls, and other virtual tools. Jones took on the role of CEO at the end of last year after spending decades with the company. Because of the requirements, we tried to step up our game on the tech front, Jones says. It took, I'd say, 3 weeks, mid-March to not quite mid-April, for agents to figure out how to conduct business in this environment. Once the firm found its footing, it began seeing business pick up a bit, going from an average of 650 sales per week at the start of the month to 900 by the end. In Durham, Nest Realty owner Julian Colton says his company had already been investing in new tools to work with clients and market homes. When the pandemic hit, his team doubled down on a new 3D home mapping tool called Matterport, a camera and software that makes a Google Maps-like tour of a space, which the company began using in recent years. Our sales meetings went to Zoom meetings, and we took the attitude that we were going to innovate and navigate the market and get property sold, Colton says. We did a lot of Matterporting. He says all this change has worked and has yielded some benefits, such as higher attendance at meetings, and brokers who were at first reluctant to adopt digital tools found them to be useful once they had to learn them. Getting agents to do that now is a lot easier because they see the value of it, Colton says. If I have an out-of-town buyer, they can get online and see the property up close. Meanwhile, as brokers adapted to this new world of virtual showings and marketing, sales and inventory continued to dip across the Triangle as buyers and sellers grappled with the uncertainty brought on by the pandemic, hitting bottom. All of this culminated in April, when restrictions on work and travel hit their peaks and companies shedded workers. Closings in Wake County slumped from 1,880 in March to 1,655 in April, according to Triangle Multiple Listing Services data supplied by the Raleigh Regional Association of Realtors. Meanwhile, in Johnston County, what started out with a record-breaking month of March quickly slowed amid the crisis, with sales dropping from 500 to 422 from March to April. In 2017, 2018, and 2019, sales had kept spiking until reaching a peak in May, June, or July. Closed sales actually increased in Durham, though this may have been impacted by many closings being delayed in March because the county deed records office was closed for much of the month due to a malware attack. Across the triangle, pending sales in April cratered at 1,654, according to real estate appraiser Stacy Anfinson. Last year, pending sales in April reached over 2,000, as the spring months typically see a boom in housing market activity. Springtime is typically the best time of the year, Smith says. Now, it's not to the volume we'd normally be seeing. I am hopeful, though. And across the country, brokers saw pending sales in April drop 21% compared to the same time last year, according to a recent report by the National Association of Realtors. With nearly all states under stay-at-home orders in April, it is no surprise to see the markedly reduced activity in signing contracts for home purchases, says Lawrence Yun, NAR's chief economist. In the Triangle, pending sales were down 20% that month, according to Anfinson. Meanwhile, listings began to drop in March and carried on into April. At Coldwell Banker HPW, the company saw listings drop from around 900 a week on average at the start of the month to 800 by the end. Listings have lagged generally in the neighborhood of about 20%, Jones says. Glimmer of hope. By May, the demand appeared to be returning across the triangle, with the most recent data available showing upticks in showings, listings, and pending sales week over week for each of the first 3 weeks of the month. In the third week of May, pending sales were up 10% from the week before and were up 19% compared to the same time last year. Year to date, pending sales are up 1% compared to the same period last year after a strong first quarter and the recent bump in May. When I look at the pending sales in the third week of May and look at what it takes to buy a house, you have to have money, the underwriting, you have to have a job and be confident in that job. To have that level of pending sales in week three was kind of amazing, Anfinson says. And all this added demand is even stronger for houses in the more affordable $350,000 and below range, where sellers are fielding multiple offers and often selling well above the list price. Every time we list a house, 30% go under contract in a week, says Colton. It's not unusual to see the winner go substantially over the list price. It's kind of crazy. We had one last week. They had 11 offers. It was probably a high 100s listing, and the winner was very aggressive. Despite the uptick in activity, challenges remain. One of the largest is housing supply, a long-time issue only exacerbated by the pandemic. Wake County, for example, had only 3,592 homes for sale in April, according to TMLS data supplied by the RRAR. Last year, the month of April had 4,078, and even that wasn't enough. The inventory issues are left over from the 2008 recession. When the recession hit, development and new housing starts slowed down substantially, Colton says. We're not building enough homes to keep up with the natural population growth. The pandemic has only heightened those issues. We don't have enough houses to sell, Colton says. When you get to places like in-town Durham, where it's the hottest market in the triangle, it gets worse. Much is contributing to that, from sellers pulling listings to moving plans on hold due to the pandemic and financial crisis. Additionally, as businesses across the country have had to shut down offices, cut costs, and lay off workers, fewer homeowners are looking to move. I'm sure corporate America is looking around saying, it's pretty expensive to move someone, and we just had this 8-week experiment of working from home, and it went okay, Anfinson says. On the bright side, he says the market hasn't seen a major influx of foreclosures, and he thinks it's unlikely to have much of an impact. People were in really good financial shape going into this, Anfinson says. Foreclosure listings were only 5% of TMLS listings, and it's been really low for years. And as demand begins to pick back up, brokers around the area are scrambling to find new homes to sell amid the upswing. We're hoping to resupply quickly and be able to take advantage, Smith says. During this pandemic, the inventory hasn't been refueled like it normally would be, and we're in low supply market anyway. The road ahead. While the market has started to look up in the last few weeks, there's still much to be determined. Across the country and throughout the triangle, business is reopening and employees are headed back to work as the spread of the virus appears to have steadied. And while this may bear good news for the housing market, Ann Finson says much can still change in the coming weeks and months. One of the biggest variables, he says, is the plans of large companies regarding remote work and where they'll be looking to grow in the future. One thing no one knows is what corporate America is going to do with their employees, Ann Finson says. Are they going to have people come in once a week, twice a week, or never? And if it's never, you can live wherever you want. Overall, Ann Finson says the growing activity in the housing market is a good sign, and not just for brokers and home sellers. To buy a house, 90% of people need a job, he says. It's not like buying an iPhone or a loaf of bread or anything like that. Right now, people are feeling comfortable enough with their jobs to be making these purchases, at least in week three in May. Meanwhile, brokers around the triangle continue working with buyers and sellers and hope for the upswing to continue. We expect that the third and fourth quarters will be really busy, Colton says. Back in Johnston County, Smith says she and her brokers are optimistic that all the business lost this spring will be roaring back in the summer. I have a feeling we're going to have a stack of spring and summer in one, Smith says. I think the floodgates are really going to open. Now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. The first headline, Raleigh Riots Spark Thought Perspective from Owners. The smashed windows and broken glass left from the Raleigh riots raised plenty of questions and perhaps few answers after an unprecedented two nights in the city. Perspectives on what happened varied. Rick French, the chairman and CEO of French West Vaughan, was incensed after rioters smashed in the front of his downtown offices. "Where was the police present Saturday night as rioters destroyed our businesses?" he wrote. The answer is nowhere to be found, at least not until 3 a.m. when most of the rioters had left for the night. The business community was left defenseless as police were instructed to stand down and not engage rioters. 12 arrests from all the destruction Saturday night? That is flat out inexcusable, he said. But another business owner only a few blocks away had a different view after his own media firm was hit. Like French, Michael Hubbard of Media 2 was heartened by how employees responded May 31, rushing to the scene to help clean up. As for the protest, Hubbard wrote, "As I rewatched videos of peaceful protesters followed by rioters and looters of all race and sex, I tried to listen to all of their messages, read their body language, feel their anger, their pain, their sorrow. I no longer cared that the property damage occurred to our building because I could see that the American people had reached a boiling point, and this was it. If hitting our windows with a baseball bat could bring back the senseless loss of life, I'd invest in a glass company and invite everyone over today." Healthcare heroes get a lift from Coach K. Duke University men's basketball coach Mike Krzyzewski is speaking out for a new effort where the school and its hospital are looking to pool intelligence to fight the pandemic. The Healthcare Worker Exposure Response and Outcomes, or HERO, registry is looking to get healthcare workers to sign into a free portal and share research and feedback on the battle against COVID-19. The portal, funded by the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, has attracted 13,000 participants so far. "To our healthcare workers, hang in there, be strong, understand that we are behind you all the way," Krzyzewski says in a video. He urges healthcare workers to sign up and adds, "Thanks for your efforts and know that to win this, we need you on the HERO team." YMCA to operate summer camps, but for families. They'll be saying ahoy there at Camp Seagull and Camp Seafarer after all. In May, the YMCA of the Triangle announced Seagull, Seafarer, and Camp Kanata will not host overnight camps for children this summer. Wyatt and Lil Taylor of Raleigh opened Seagull in 1948 and Seafarer in 1961 near Arapahoe, and the camps have both been staples of North Carolina summers, places where children learn to sail and enjoy their broad campuses. And Camp Kanata in Wake Forest is a longtime hub of Y activities. Now, the YMCA will launch family camps July 1 through August 16. The Y says the camp will have protections and keep social distancing in mind. It might not be the usual experience, but for kids and ahoy there with mom and dad, is better than hanging around the house. In North Carolina, no wave of bankruptcies yet. The staggering blow to businesses from the pandemic has a surprising result so far. Bankruptcy filings are low. In fact, there were no Chapter 11 filings for the U.S. Eastern District of North Carolina in April, Smith Anderson attorney Jeb Juder says, and only six so far in May. It was presumed that there would be a huge increase in bankruptcy filings immediately upon entry of the stay-at-home order and related restrictions, Juder says. Then the PPP money and increase in federal unemployment benefits came along, giving many businesses a lifeline. Cost could be a factor. Chapter 11 can cost more than $25,000. I continue to believe there will be an uptick in bankruptcy filings, he says, but I am thinking more like third or fourth quarter. Aldi confirms first store will be coming to Johnston County. Affordable grocery chain Aldi has confirmed its plans for a new store in Johnston County in the latest chapter of the growing competition among grocers vying for space in the Triangle. Late last month, a German grocer paid $3.4 million for a property with a Garner address on the Johnston side of the county line. The land is situated on Sunland Parkway at the intersection of NC Highway 42, near a collection of retail plazas and east of Interstate 40. Aldi currently has no stores in operation in Johnston County, according to the company's website. Over the past year, Aldi stores have been popping up around the Triangle as the company continues to expand its footprint in the region. It's part of the company's $3.4 billion investment plan to expand to 2,500 stores nationwide by the end of 2022. Aldi currently has around a dozen locations in the Triangle and over 1,800 locations across the U.S. And finally, Duke study says coronavirus had help from a pangolin. A new study by researchers at Duke University has traced the origins of COVID-19 and a scaly animal you've never heard of is involved. According to a genetic analysis by Duke researchers with other universities, the closest relative of the virus infecting humans is a virus that infects bats. But the study found that virus ability to infect humans was gained through exchanging a critical gene fragment from a coronavirus that infects a scaly mammal called a pangolin. That exchange, the study found, is what made it possible for the virus to infect humans. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Caleb Harshberger. Durham Group to turn former YWCA into affordable housing. A Durham-based affordable housing provider has filed plans with the city to convert Durham's historic Harriet Tubman YWCA into new affordable housing after the group bought the property last year. Last month, Reinvestment Partners filed plans and a rezoning request with the city to turn the building into 14 affordable housing units for low-income residents. The group has titled the new project Harriet's Place. The property is situated on 0.7 acres at 312 East Umstead Street, south of downtown. Reinvestment Partners paid $304,500 for the property in September. Reinvestment Partners Executive Director Peter Skillern says the company is active in that part of Durham, and when the property went up for a foreclosure sale, the company quickly bought it and began raising money to restore a significant historical and cultural site in Durham. The YWCA was formed in the 1920s, and they were able to raise money and build this new facility in 1954, Skillern says. Dorothy Height was at the opening ceremony, and Ms. Height was a national leader in the civil rights movement. Part of the importance of the building is the cultural and social significance to Durham. The YWCA ran for about two decades before ceasing operations in the 1970s. The building was ultimately condemned and changed hands a few times before ending up on foreclosure sale last fall. Despite the years of neglect, Skillern says the building is structurally sound. It has very strong bones, he says. It's going to look great. It will maintain the architectural features it has now. We're keeping the interior layout and adding an elevator and stairway shaft. Once complete, the renovated building will feature 14 single-room units with congregate services. And while the precise median income requirements have yet to be determined, he says the units will be for very low-income residents. The group hopes to begin construction by next year and to complete the project the year after that. If we could open our doors in 2022, we'd consider it a big success, he says. In the meantime, the group is still raising capital for the project. The budget is currently $2.5 million. Reinvestment Partners is a Durham-based affordable housing provider and advocate working to foster healthy and just communities by empowering people, improving places, and influencing policy, according to the group. Lowe's Foods plans a new location in booming Pittsburgh. Winston-Salem-based Lowe's Foods has plans to bring a new store to a major mixed-use development underway in Pittsburgh. Lowe's, in April, filed plans with the town for the development of Northwood Lowe's Foods. The project calls for a grocery store, retail space, and a gas station at the ongoing Mosaic development. Plans show a 50,000-square-foot grocery store and 8,400-square-foot of retail space, and not including the gas station. The project is situated on 7 acres off Highway 15501 by U.S. 64 north of Pittsburgh. Representatives for Lowe's Foods and parent company Alex Lee could not be reached for comment. The developer is the Crown Companies of Dobson. The property owner is Preston Development Company. The owner and developer of Chatham Park, the 7,100-acre mixed-use project for which Mosaic will serve as a commercial gateway. Construction is underway on Mosaic in Chatham County. Commercial tenants announced for Mosaic include Town Hall Burger and Beer and People's Coffee, as well as an Avita Day Spa and Salon and UNC Urgent Care. Lowe's Foods has nearly 100 stores across North Carolina and South Carolina, including 15 in the Triangle. Raleigh, Tennessee firms team up on two new apartment projects. Capital Commercial of Raleigh and TDK of Murfreesboro, Tennessee, started work on the Vintage Jones Franklin apartments earlier this year. Now they plan two more apartment projects. In West Raleigh, they plan a 359-unit apartment community next to Drive Shack off Corporate Center Drive. Initial plans had called for a mixed-use layout. Tyler Morris, partner with Capital Commercial, says they made some changes as a result of the pandemic. In Durham, Capital has plans for a 208-unit complex by University Tower. Raleigh manufacturing facility plots expansion. A German manufacturer is moving ahead with plans to nearly triple the size of its Raleigh facility. The building is on 6 acres at 5850 Oak Forest Drive in Northeast Raleigh, surrounded by industrial buildings near Triangle Town Center. Schmalz announced last year that despite incentives offered by the locations in Ohio and Indiana, it would remain in Raleigh and increase its investment. The company, with 70 employees at the time, cited incentives packages being considered by the city of Raleigh and Wake County, as well as the talent pool in the Triangle. And next to that article, there's a number, 60,000 square feet. The amount of space vacuum technology manufacturer Schmalz Incorporated filed to add to its existing 36,000 square foot facility. And finally, mixed use development in Holly Springs. A North Carolina developer has filed plans for a new development in Holly Springs calling for apartments, offices, and hotel space. 45 acres. Cross Commercial Real Estate Group has filed plans for Green Oaks Crossing, which will be a 45-acre mixed-use development, 96,700 square feet. The project, according to the developer's website, will call for 96,700 square feet of retail and grocery space, with 25,000 in restaurant space and 10,000 in office space. And finally, 250. The number of luxury apartments to be included inside Green Oaks Crossing. Diagrams also show a lot designated for a hotel. And turning to the On Healthcare page written by Seth Thomas Gulledge, the first article, Rising Hospitalizations Concern UNC Doctors. Doctors with UNC Health say the rising number of COVID-19 hospitalizations could be a canary in the coal mine for what's to come as North Carolina moves forward with reopening plans. As of June 3, the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services reported 684 people were in North Carolina hospitals due to coronavirus, a slightly lower figure than the record high of 716 on June 2. The figures averaged around 500 per day for the first half of May. Dr. David Wohl, who leads UNC Medical Center's Respiratory Diagnostic Center and previously worked combating viral infections such as Ebola, says the trend is concerning. He says that while other metrics, such as the total number of new cases and dependent on testing and that in general, testing is fraught with a little bit of difficulty. The number of hospitalizations is a true endpoint. One thing you can't really hide are hospitalizations, he says. That's really the truest canary in the coal mine for us. If we're seeing people get sick enough to be admitted to the hospital, that's telling you we've not flattened the curve. Dr. William Fisher, an associate professor of medicine at UNC, says the rising number is concerning because it comes as people relax behaviors meant to slow the spread. We've seen social distancing, hand hygiene, and masking have worked to keep the numbers lower, he says. And as we open up and as some social distancing practices get relaxed, we're going to see more cases. Adding to that concern is the period of delay between transmission and someone being admitted to the hospital. People who enter into the hospital generally have been infected maybe 2 to 3 weeks prior to that and have been symptomatic on average about 10 days before they get into the hospital, Wohl says. Durham's Icagen lands potential $274 million deal with pharma giant. A triangle company landed a license agreement with an international pharmaceutical giant that could bring as much as $274 million to the local outfit. Durham's Icagen announced the license and collaboration agreement with Switzerland-based Roche for the development and potential commercialization of small molecule therapeutics for neurological disorders. The agreement is based on Icagen's ion channel research and is directed at specific targets found in neurons with the hope of treating various disorders. We're excited about partnering with Roche to develop treatments for difficult-to-treat neurological diseases and look forward to collaborating with them to help bring medicines to patients, Icagen CEO Richie Cunningham says. Roche will pay an undisclosed amount upfront and provide research funding to Icagen. In addition, Icagen is eligible to receive development and commercial milestone payments of up to $274 million and royalty payments on any successfully commercialized drugs. Blue Cross NC waives Medicare co-pays in 2020. As the county continues to deal with the pandemic and health providers search for ways to maintain and improve access to care, North Carolina's largest insurer is waiving off co-pays for its senior members. On June 2, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina announced it intends to waive all co-pays for in-network primary care and outpatient behavioral health visits for its Medicare Advantage members through the end of 2020. The visits can be done either virtually or through telehealth and do not have to be related to COVID-19 to qualify. According to company officials, Blue Cross NC has about 69,000 members in its Medicare Advantage plan. The company says it hopes eliminating the copays will encourage more utilization of necessary medical services during the pandemic. Conflict brews over telemedicine reimbursement. To help combat the pandemic, insurers and regulators adopted temporary policies to encourage telemedicine, policies that are now being contended. Beginning in March, commercial payers such as Cigna and Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, along with government payers such as Medicaid and Medicare, adopted reimbursement policies that paid for telemedicine visits at the same rate as in-person visits. The goal was to support providers who lost revenue from the lockdown and encourage them to continue addressing health needs. But both BCBSNC and Cigna's policies are set to expire on July 31, United Healthcare's on June 18, and Aetna's on June 4. Cody Han, the Senior Vice President of Government Relations for the North Carolina Healthcare Association, says the group supports making these changes permanently. But BCBSNC says mandating that reimbursements are forever on par with in-person visits would permanently increase the costs of telehealth, take away our ability to improve access to priority services, and eliminate the flexibility that's needed to design a policy that best serves members. BioCryst adds cash, eyes possible COVID-19 drug. After announcing an expected $100 million in gross proceeds from its latest public offering, Research Triangle Park-based BioCryst Pharmaceutical says it added $15 million to its haul. BioCryst announced recently that it intended to offer 18.7 million of its shares alongside warrants for an additional 3.5 million, bringing in about $100 million. On June 1, it announced the underwriters for the offering exercised their options in full. Before deducting certain discounts and commissions, the company now says its expected proceeds will be $115 million. In Brazil, BioCryst is exploring Galidasivir as a treatment for COVID-19. That's spelled Galidesivir. The drug has been in development since 2013 as a therapeutic for Ebola and Marburg viruses, and now is being tested on coronavirus patients. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the page written by Dathan Kazik on restaurants and retail. The first headline, Bars, Taverns Frustrated by Inability to Open in North Carolina. North Carolina bar owners across the state have been in limbo after phase two of Governor Roy Cooper's plan to reopen the state has left them high and dry. Bars are seeing establishments next to them, restaurants, breweries, and other places of business open at half capacity, while their lights stay unlit. One person leading the charge to reopen bars and taverns is Zach Medford, who owns Coughlin's, Patio Beers, and Isaac Hunter's Tavern in downtown Raleigh, which all received damage during the May 30 riots. Medford is president of the North Carolina Bar and Tavern Association, which was planning a lawsuit seeking to overturn the exclusion of bars, taverns, and nightclubs that were left behind when Executive Order 141 became reality on May 22. Medford contends that bars deserve the same treatment under the order as restaurants, breweries, distilleries, and wineries, which were allowed to open. "We don't want special treatment, we just want equal treatment," Medford says. There are six classifications from the Alcoholic Beverage Control Office dealing with permits, and currently five of those are in operation. The final one is reserved for private bars. "You can go to a brewery and get a beer, or go to a distillery and get a cocktail, but you can't go to Isaac Hunter's Tavern and do the same," he says. Medford states that a call with Cooper on June 3 wasn't nearly as productive as we'd have preferred, but that wasn't unexpected. Despite hearing the facts laid out, Cooper and his office couldn't give the NCBATA a hard date that bars could reopen. "The clock has run out," says Medford. The association was planning on filing the lawsuit the evening of June 3rd. Non-alcoholic Kava Bar set to open in Durham. The husband and wife duo of Brent Waffle and Zoe Best are bringing a 3,000-year-old Pacific Island shrub to Durham. Kava, which is designed to relax both the body and the brain, will be highlighted when DeKine's Kava Bar opens in Durham's West End neighborhood by mid to late June. "It's a shrub, and the root is what you consume because it makes you feel nice and relaxed," Best says. A Durham native with a master's degree in marine biology, Best met Waffle while the two were in Wilmington. "And then Hurricane Florence hit, and we ended up losing our jobs," she says. They headed to Durham, planning to open the first Kava bar in the Bull City, but they aren't the first in the Triangle. Carborough's Crave has been doing business since 2015, and Best says Raleigh is in the process of landing its first Kava bar. DeKine's, which derives from the Hawaiian language pidgin, means any kind, which is what Best and Waffle wanted in the name, something that will be accessible to everyone. "Our drinks at our bar will be completely non-alcoholic, and so we'll also feature herbal teas, coffees, and kombucha," Best says. In place of cocktails, DeKine's will sell 8-ounce and 16-ounce bottles of elixirs, such as cucumber mojito and guava colada. Wendell Brewery is on target to open this summer. Wendell is about to bring its first brewery to the historic downtown area when Bearded Bee Brewing Company opens early this summer. The brainchild of Derek and Carrie Askew and Dave Lewis, the brewery is under construction inside a building once owned by a lawn and garden store that did small engine repair. "The lawnmower people moved out on January 1, and we moved in and started construction almost immediately," says Carrie Askew. The building was also one of the first horse stable buildings for the town of Wendell. The brewery, which houses 6 10-barrel fermenters in the back, has room for expansion as it can easily fit a couple more fermenters. "We're going to start off with 6 beers when we open," Askew says. "We'll quickly go to 12 beers after that, as well as some guest taps." The brewery plans to eventually feature 22 of its own beers. "We plan on having not one specific style, but we'll at least have 2 or 3 that are honey-style beers," she says. The name comes from the fact that its brewer started as a beekeeper. And there's also a section called Restaurant Rundown. Restaurants around the Triangle are a week into reopening as part of Governor Roy Cooper's Phase 2 order. Raleigh's Michael Thor at Whiskey Kitchen was ready to open. Whiskey Kitchen in Raleigh, Michael Thor, owner. Will you raise your prices on some of your menu items due to the shortages? As of now, we have no intention of raising our prices. It is our hope to continue operating as if nothing happened, just with masks on our faces, gloves on our hands, and disinfectant close by. Will you still continue to do curbside and delivery? We will offer curbside as long as we're able to utilize the designated curbside pickup area the city has allowed us. Whiskey Kitchen will stop delivering ourselves, but we will still be working with third-party delivery services, DoorDash, Grubhub, etc. And also, Coronado in Carrboro, Teddy Diggs, owner, chef, is opening your business at 50% or less worth it? Opening at anything less than half the 50% occupancy limit includes staff, so our guest capacity will be only 20 at any given time. We will use Phase 2 as an opportunity to train any new staff and retrain existing staff right before Phase 3 begins. Will you have to raise your prices on some of your menu items due to the shortages? No plans to raise our prices. And now we turn to the On Business page written by Connie Gentry. Sports Endeavor sues Michigan firm over client. A Hillsboro-based athletic apparel company that was working to acquire another company's business has now filed a lawsuit against the company. Sports Endeavors, a family-owned and operated retailer of athletic apparel, shoes, and equipment that sells to individuals as well as soccer teams and clubs throughout the country, has filed a lawsuit in the Eastern District of North Carolina, seeking declaratory judgment action against the soccer center, Titan Sports, doing business as Motor City Soccer. In February, Sports Endeavors entered into negotiation with Motor City, one of its competitors that is based in Livonia, Michigan, in an attempt to acquire the part of Motor City's business that sells attire to soccer clubs. Those negotiations continued until May, when Sports Endeavors informed Motor City that the Michigan Jaguars, which was the largest account held by Motor City, had moved its entire soccer attire business to Sports Endeavors. Subsequently, Motor City's attorney sent a letter on May 15 to Sports Endeavors threatening to sue the company for allegedly pirating its lead account and for having breached the mutual confidentiality agreement the two companies had established on March 20. Sports Endeavors filed its own lawsuit later in May, claiming it had been in discussion with the Michigan Jaguars since 2017. Further, the lawsuit alleges the Jaguars' decision to move to Sports Endeavors had nothing to do with information obtained during the negotiations with Motor City. According to the lawsuit, the owner of Motor City, Kristen Calloway, initiated the contact with Sports Endeavors on February 13 with a request to discuss the possibility of Sports Endeavors purchasing Motor City Soccer Club business. Discussions ensued between Calloway and Brendan Moylan, a co-owner of Sports Endeavors, and on March 10, Moylan requested further information about the Motor City business, including customer information that the suit claims could have been provided anonymously but actually included details of customer names and financial information. The lawsuit filed by Sports Endeavors contends that they acquired the Michigan Jaguars account through discussions that had preceded the potential purchase of Motor City and that there was no breach of the MCA. It states that the Jaguars contacted the company in February, expressed an interest in doing business with Sports Endeavors, and that the Jaguars had made the decision to move their account before Motor City provided any customer names or financial details to them. Furthermore, it alleges the value of the Motor City acquisition has decreased because the Michigan Jaguars is no longer part of that portfolio. North Carolina jobless rate surges in pandemic. In a study released last week from AdvisorSmith, North Carolina ranks number 11 among states with the highest increase in unemployment due to the pandemic. The ranking is based on the increase in unemployment rate from January to April, including both unemployment data and workers who left the labor force. According to the study, North Carolina's unemployment rate increased 16% from January to April. The official North Carolina unemployment rate was 3.6% in January and rose to 12.2% in April. During that time, Advisor Smith reports the state's labor force participation rate declined by 5 percentage points from 61% in January to 56% in April. Advisor Smith examined the changes in unemployment rates across every state, comparing the unemployment rate in April to the rate in January 2020. The study looked at data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics to determine an adjusted unemployment rate for the month of April that includes workers who have stopped looking for work and dropped out of the labor force. For North Carolina, the adjusted unemployment rate for April was 20% when using this method, Advisor Smith found. And next we have David Pertell's page on business. Firm that detects cancer investing in RTP Branch. A healthcare company with a focus on the early detection of cancer plans a $100 million investment in Research Triangle Park that will create nearly 400 jobs. Grail Incorporated, founded in 2015 and based in California's Bay Area, will build a laboratory facility in RTP. The company is developing a blood test that detects dozens of cancer types. The project, announced by Governor Roy Cooper June 2nd, includes office and warehouse space. North Carolina is providing incentives worth up to $5.2 million over 12 years. It's projected the company will add $1.2 billion to the state's economy over that same period, according to the North Carolina Department of Commerce, which said average salaries for the new jobs will be in line with the average annual wage in Durham County of $71,000. The state's Economic Investment Committee approved a job development investment grant for the company. Uplaksh Kumar, Senior Vice President of Strategic Operations and Scale at Grail, says, "This expansion is an important step forward in making our pioneering multi-cancer early detection blood test widely available to patients and healthcare providers across the country." Grail is a private company whose investors include Amazon, Merck, and Johnson & Johnson. It recently reached $2 billion in funding following a $390 million raise that closed in early May. In March, the company said a 15,000-participant study showed its diagnostic could specify the organ where cancer was growing with 93% accuracy, with a false positive rate of less than 1%. Last call comes from Cameron Bar and Grill. A restaurant in Raleigh's Cameron Village has closed permanently amid the pandemic. Cameron Bar and Grill has shut down after more than a decade in business, the restaurant announced on Facebook in late May. The establishment off Clark Avenue is owned by Raleigh restaurateur Gaurav G. Patel. "As we continue to navigate this time of economic uncertainty with our hospitality industry peers, we've made the difficult decision to permanently close effective immediately," Patel said in a post recently. Patel, founder of the restaurant group Echelon Experiences, continues to operate Edwards Mill Bar and Grill, which has resumed dine-in service, and the Haymaker. "Our sister properties will continue to welcome guests, and we look forward to having the opportunity to host you soon," the post said. Cameron Bar and Grill is the latest Triangle restaurant to cease operations as a result of the pandemic. Chef Ashley Christensen has closed Chuck's in downtown Raleigh, and Gonza Tacos and Tequila has shut down its Durham location. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. First, we start with the column written by David Heinen, who is the Vice President for Public Policy and Advocacy at the North Carolina Center for Nonprofits. The headline, "Here's How Businesses Can Help Nonprofits." As the Triangle's nonprofits have adapted to the new normal of life during COVID-19 pandemic, the immediate needs of charitable organizations are becoming more evident. Last month, the North Carolina Center for Nonprofits, the North Carolina Office of State Budget and Management, and the North Carolina Secretary of State launched a survey of charitable nonprofits across the state to get a sense of how the pandemic has affected their operations and communities. More than 700 organizations have responded, and their answers provide insights about ways business leaders can help preserve and restore critical programs and services offered by Triangle nonprofits. Here are three ways the business community can help. Giving. Many nonprofits, including arts and cultural organizations, child care providers, and YMCAs, rely on earned income as a primary revenue stream. Some get their largest donations from galas, charity runs, and other in-person fundraisers. Others operate thrift shops to fund their services. With the pandemic limiting these funding sources, it's no surprise that 74% of nonprofits report they have experienced a decline in revenue. The Paycheck Protection Program has provided short-term relief for many nonprofits, as 44% of respondents have received loans and another 15% either are considering applying or have applications pending. The reality is that the nonprofit's revenue challenges will likely persist long after the temporary assistance is gone. In fact, many Triangle nonprofits are likely to take a much larger financial hit in the coming months as local governments make funding cuts to maintain balanced budgets with depleted tax revenue. The Triangle's charitable organizations are now more reliant on individual philanthropy than any time in recent memory. Of course, with many North Carolinians out of work, the pool of potential donors is smaller than usual. Business leaders still able to contribute can maximize their donations by increasing the amount to nonprofits they already support, writing a check to a charity even if its fundraising event has been canceled, and contacting an organization before donating to see if it still needs the support. About 10% of local nonprofits are concerned they may go out of business within the next 6 months. Volunteering. Charitable nonprofits often rely on volunteers to provide programs and services. Nonprofits responding to the survey have lost more than 50,000 volunteers due to COVID-19. Business leaders can help fill the volunteer shortfall in a variety of ways. If you are temporarily out of work, consider scheduling part of your week to volunteer for a local charity. If your business has a capacity to do so, have your staff take turns volunteering with the nonprofit. Offering pro bono services can be a tremendous help to nonprofits. Many need help with human resources, information technology, business planning, and contract negotiation, among other professional services. If you know of college students or graduate students looking for a meaningful experience this summer or fall, encourage them to consider an internship with a nonprofit. More than 41% of nonprofits that responded to the survey said that it would be helpful to have an intern over the next 3 to 6 months. And finally, listening. As frontline service providers, nonprofits often have an acute awareness of the needs and sensitivities of the people they serve, including children, people in poverty, seniors, individuals with disabilities, and people experiencing homelessness. Notably, nearly a quarter of the nonprofits that have replied to the survey provide services primarily to communities of color. Sadly, communities of color have suffered a disproportionate number of COVID-19 diagnoses and deaths in North Carolina, and the recent killing of George Floyd has shed a greater light on the racial issues that plague our country. Nonprofits can provide an avenue for business leaders to hear the authentic voices of all parts of our community so that they can help create a new normal for the Triangle that is more equitable than our pre-COVID-19 world. And also in nonprofit news, Cap Trust Foundation awards $100,000 to Team Smile. Team Smile has been named the Cap Trust Community Foundation's Charity of Choice for 2020. Team Smile will receive a $100,000 grant as well as support from Cap Trust volunteers throughout the year. Team Smile helps provide dental care to children in need. The foundation also announced that Parkland Cares Food Pantry, Note in the Pocket, and Respite Care of San Antonio will receive $25,000 gifts. In addition, Cap Trust has raised $145,000, well over its goal of $100,000, to provide grants to nonprofits on the front lines of the effort to stem the pandemic. The foundation is run by Cap Trust employees and has awarded more than $1.8 million in grants since being founded in 2007. We are humbled and grateful for the organization's support in fulfilling our mission to provide children in need with a life-changing dental experience through the power of sports, said John McCarthy, executive director of Team Smile. In 2019, we conducted 33 programs, served 7,123 children nationwide, and provided over $2.8 million in free dental care and oral health education. We look forward to tremendous engagement from Cap Trust employees, and we are truly grateful for their support. American Dance Festival celebrates the arts in video. The American Dance Festival, a nonprofit based in Durham, is presenting The World Is Our Stage, 60-Second Video Dance Challenge, sponsored by The Forest at Duke. In an effort to support local creativity and choreographers and to continue engaging audiences, ADF invited 20 North Carolina choreographers, 16 from the Triangle, to create a 60-second video dance that will be featured during a week-long online festival beginning June 8, 2020. ADF will release 4 videos per day for 5 days on the ADF website. The 3 videos with the highest number of votes will receive awards. First place will receive a $1,000 honorarium and 40 hours of studio time at ADF's Script Studios. Second place will receive a $500 honorarium and 20 hours of studio time. Third place will receive $250 honorarium and 10 hours of studio time. All winners will receive 2 tickets to a 2021 ADF performance and have their video screened during the 2021 festival. And finally, UNC System announces grants to help students. The University of North Carolina System says various entities have donated over $700,000 to student emergency funds, which will be used to support students across the state. The donations were inspired by an original gesture from the University of North Carolina Association of Student Governments, or UNCASG, which donated $65,000 to constituent institutions' student emergency funds. An anonymous donor matched this initial contribution. The coronavirus pandemic forced UNCASG to cancel or reschedule a number of events earlier this year, and the group decided to distribute the money to institution funds specifically designed to support UNC System students. Other funders stepped up with a matching or larger gift. These include a $250,000 gift from the John M. Belk Endowment, a $235,000 gift from the C.D. Spangler Foundation, and a $160,000 contribution from Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina. I would like to applaud the UNCASG for its recent decision to redirect $65,000 to student emergency funds at each of our institutions, said UNC System Interim President Bill Roper. Thanks to UNCASG's strategic thinking and the generous matching and exceeding gifts, these dollars will have an immediate impact on the lives of students who are struggling financially as a result of this crisis. I'm grateful to each of these donors for their support. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline: New PPP rules leave questions unanswered for borrowers. On June 3, by unanimous consent, the U.S. Senate passed a House of Representatives bill that called for sweeping changes to the Small Business Administration's Paycheck Protection Program. In a broader sense, the changes made to the $660 billion loan program should make most of the 4.4 million businesses and self-employed individuals happy. But the devil is always in the details. But first, the most important changes to PPP that will soon become the law. The CARES Act granted borrowers 8 weeks to spend the PPP loan money on mortgages, workers, rent, and utilities to qualify for full loan forgiveness. That now changes to 24 weeks from the date of the loan's origination. Borrowers had to apportion at least 75% of the PPP money toward labor costs. The new rule sets the threshold at 60%. If borrowers are not able to get the PPP money forgiven, they had 2 years to pay off the loan. Now under the provision, they have 5 years. Borrowers had until June 30 to replace all their full-time equivalents as they were on February 15. Now they have until December 31 to bring their level of full-time equivalents back to February levels and not risk reduction of forgiveness. Businesses were allowed to defer the employer portion of Social Security taxes until next year and beyond. The deferral would have stopped when the loan was forgiven. Under the new law, regardless of when the loan is forgiven, businesses can defer the Social Security pay until 2022, 50% to be paid in 2021 and the remainder in 2022. So these are some big changes, and with the U.S. economy marred by the pandemic and the nationwide protests about social justice, it became evident that the restaurant, lodging, entertainment, retail, and perhaps even many of the business-to-business entities were simply not in a position to ramp up operations. But the new law also comes with a couple of major caveats that need to be addressed by the SBA and the U.S. Department of Treasury through their interim final rule guidance in the next few weeks. Forgiveness calculation. While the new law states businesses can spend more of the PPP money on non-payroll items, it does not detail what may happen if the payroll costs fall under 60% of the PPP loan. Under the current rule, if payroll costs dip under 75%, businesses would still qualify for forgiveness, only it will be prorated down. The remainder would then become a loan that needs to be paid off. But the way the new law is written, it reads as if the percentage falls under 60%, the entire PPP becomes a loan. SBA must address this quickly. Compensation level. Under current PPP rules, the limit on forgivable compensation for workers and owner employees are capped at 8 weeks on a 52-week pay scale based on an annual salary of $100,000 or under. Does the new rule replace the 8 weeks to 24 weeks? That would mean cash compensation per employee through December 31 would go up from $15,000 plus 8-week calculation on $100,000 salary to $46,000 plus 24-week calculation on $100,000 salary. And finally, lender portfolio. Because the loans under the new law could be paid off in 5 years instead of two, the lender service costs tied to these loans are expected to increase dramatically, especially for community banks who jumped in early to help communities get the federal assistance. Could there be an additional liquidity function beyond the private secondary market for these lenders to sell back the loans to the government? In the coming days, there will be plenty of more questions. But one thing is for sure, borrowers that jumped in early to get the PPP money and have spent most of that money without seeing much improvement in business activity are not the happiest campers right now. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.